Welcome to another episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast with your hosts, Sean Sorrentino and Aaron Paulette.
Welcome to episode 164 of Gunblog Variety Cast Radio, a proud member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. How are you doing, Aaron?
Well, I am back from Gun Rights Policy Conference, where I had a great time, met a lot of people, and, you know, not to boost my own ego or anything, but friends and strangers alike were telling me that my speech was one of the best presentations of the entire convention, so my ego is a little swollen, and my arm is just a little sprained from patting myself on the back.
And like I said online, it's not really anything other than what I expected, Aaron.
Yeah, I do need more practice because I can see room for improvement, but everyone else is telling me I did a great job.
Yeah, you did a good job, but like I said, that's what I expect. That's what you do. That's who you are.
Oh, thank you. So if you weren't able to make it to GRPC to hear me talk, do not worry. The guys from Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns, who also run LFD Research, recorded every single bit of the conference, and you can watch it on YouTube. Now, next year, GRPC is being held in Chicago, which to me, going to Chicago to talk about gun rights is a lot like going to North Korea to talk about liberty. But I was told that one of the reasons behind picking this location is because the city of Chicago is actually one of the Second Amendment Foundation's biggest donors. And so we should give back to them in that regard.
An involuntary donor, yes.
True. And so when it was explained to me like that, I go, well, okay, I can see your reasoning. It hasn't been made official, but I have been informally asked to speak at GRPC next year. And who knows, I may even speak on a Saturday instead.
Well, that's pretty cool.
So how about you, Sean? While I was mixing and bumping elbows with the gun rights glitterati, what were you doing?
Well, I was reeling from the sudden destruction of my stove. I am very upset.
I saw something about that on Facebook. Something about how this is the second time the glass surface of your stove is broken.
Yeah. The first time was back in May, something like that. It was less than a year after we moved into the house, so it was still under warranty. And those tool heads, instead of just fixing it or giving us a new one, they gave us a new glass top and told us to go find somebody to install it, which ended up costing us about $120. The wife has never liked glass top ranges. And I'm like, oh, these are going to be really cool. It's a glass top range. It's probably really easy to clean. No, it's not. It sucks.
Really?
Oh,
I would have thought that they'd be easy to clean.
Yeah, so would I. Now, apparently the ceramic top ones, you can clean those just fine. They're not hard. My wife's cleaned them. She says, nah, they're really nice. This glass top thing, everything bakes to it and sticks, and you spend all day cleaning, scrubbing, wire wooling it. I don't know what all. I'm not allowed anywhere near the thing because I probably would have taken a hammer to it a long time ago because it's just a pain to clean. So after all of the hassle of cleaning the stupid thing, it finally breaks less than a year after we've gotten it. And now, what is it, October? It wasn't even October when it broke, so it was the end of September. So 6 months after that, it decides to break again. And see, we didn't know exactly what caused it to break last time. Was there any possibility that something dropped on it? We couldn't remember that anything had dropped on it. But, you know, there was always this nagging doubt that maybe we'd done something to it and it had cracked. This time we know exactly what was going on. I was in bed, so clearly me not responsible for it, which is, as a husband, really important to know. The wife, she was making chicken stock, right? So she's got this big old stock pot, bunch of chicken, making chicken stock. She's boiling it away, and then she goes out, she turns off the stove, goes into this office, sits down at her computer. 10, 15 minutes later, there's this rending crash. She runs in there, and there's glass pieces everywhere. It didn't just like crack like it did last time. Like little glass shards like shot out of it. There was these glass pieces all over the place. The glass surface, instead of being like just a crack in it and even, it's like displaced and parts underneath it. And it's just like, you don't even want to use it. The last time it broke, I didn't feel bad about using it. This time, I don't want to touch it. Well, of course, we called them. Oh, it's out of warranty. It's over a year old now. I'm like, this is the second time this stupid thing is broken. And now you're telling me, oh no, it's out of warranty. This is crap. This is a piece of junk if it's a $400, $500, $600 item and it can't last but a year before it breaks the first time and then immediately breaks again. This isn't misuse. My wife has been using a stove for a long time now. It's not like she's playing, you know, with hammers on the thing. It's not like she's juggling pots and pans and dropping it on the thing. She takes good care of it, and she did nothing wrong with it, and it decides it's going to crack. And they're like, suck it.
I'm still confused how cooking chicken stock on the stove caused it to crack. I mean, was it turning it off, and so the burner cooled faster than the pot did, and the thermal difference? I don't know.
There's no earthly reason why turning off a stove would cause the stove to crack.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, the wife right now is in the process of looking for a stove, and I can guarantee you it will not say Frigidaire anywhere on it. And not only will it not say Frigidaire, it won't be made by the Electrolux company, because Frigidaire is an Electrolux brand.
So no plug of the week for them anywhere in the foreseeable future.
Probably not.
So Sean, for the past month or so, you've been talking about our big tourniquet giveaway. Do we have a winner?
I'm kind of torn here. Do I announce it on the Facebook group, or do I announce it in the podcast and see how long it takes for this person to contact us and say, hey, I'm the winner? What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, I like that. Let's just keep it on the podcast for now. If he hasn't contacted us in about a week, maybe we'll nudge him to see what's going on.
All right, so our winner, it's not you, Aaron, I can tell you that.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, I know. I'm such a jerk. The winner of the cat tourniquet giveaway is Paul Chabala, and hopefully I have not butchered your name, Paul. I've probably got that part right. You get a cat tourniquet, you get a little carry pouch that it came with, and courtesy of Filster, you get a Filster flat pack. So email me, Sean at seansorrentino.com, or you can contact me via the Facebook group. Let me know what your address is, and I will put it in the mail to you as soon as you contact me.
Thanks to Lucky Gunner and Remington for their support of Gunblog Variety Cast Radio. From Golden Saber to Range Rounds, get a full lineup of quality Remington ammo that ships fast at LuckyGunner.com.
Well, let's get on with the show.
Beth is on assignment and will return soon.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to GunblogVarietyCast.com and click on the Donate or Subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us.
Felons behaving badly. No plans to search for Dilworth carjacking suspect who may have drowned. Dateline Charlotte, North Carolina. Police say three armed men carjacked a former Marine.
Former Marine? I thought all Marines were always Marines.
Layers and layers of fact checkers. In the parking lot of Ed's Tavern in the Dilworth neighborhood Monday night. One suspect is in custody, and police spent hours Tuesday afternoon searching for a second that they believe fell into Irwin Creek. The third man is still on the run. Charlotte Fire Department said there was no plans Wednesday to go back out into the creek and search for the suspect. Officers responded around 11:30 p.m. Monday to a carjacking call at Ed's Tavern. Ed's Tavern is an institution with a very loyal clientele. Alexa Crost, who is a regular customer along with her boyfriend, was surprised to learn about the carjacking. It's a great spot. I really enjoy coming here, Crost said. It could have been me walking out. It could have been anybody I know. It's unfortunate that it happened to anybody. Police say a 31-year-old ex-Marine...
Well, there it is again.
...went to get some food because the power had gone out in his apartment. As he was leaving, he was approached by three men with guns, police said. Police said a short time later, officers located a red sedan used in the carjacking and initiated a traffic stop. But the driver took off and there was a short chase. The two people in the car jumped and ran from the vehicle at South Clarkson Street at the I-77 South ramp, officers said. Officers took one of the suspects, Suspect 1, into custody. He is charged with armed robbery and fleeing to elude police. Officers didn't find the second suspect, but found footprints and belongings at the edge of Irwin Creek on West Moorhead Street and Freedom Drive. Police said the creek had swelled to 7 to 8 feet during Monday night's storms. It's a shame that happened, customer Ramsey Mara said. We don't know for sure he's dead, though if he is, I hate it. Never wish that on anybody. Police said firefighters spent Tuesday morning searching the creek near Barringer Drive, but ended the search. I would say it's very unlikely, just from my experience. On this rapid water, swift water, at that speed and depth, It takes you where it wants to go, when it wants to take you, and how it wants to take you. It's not very forgiving, Major Gerald Smith of the CMPD said. Investigators said they located the victim's vehicle at a home in the Wilmore neighborhood through the OnStar system, but could not find the other suspect. Marco Ostopilco, who has owned a beauty salon in the area for 12 years, said he is not worried about this area taking a hit over one high-profile crime. I'm very surprised that happened, but you know the Dilworth area is real quiet, Ostopilco said. It's a nice place to work. That's why I love to work here. And I know, Aaron, that you're terribly broken up that somebody who would carjack a Marine, or anybody else, honestly, might have unfortunately drowned in swift-running water after a flood.
Yeah, that's just a terrible, terrible tragedy of instant karma.
You're so bloodthirsty, Aaron. I can't believe you.
You know, I really do like it when bad people just save us the expense of a trial. Let's talk about the suspect who lived. What's in his permanent record?
Possessed Schedule 2, Felon Class I. 2 counts, felony breaking and entering, Felon Class H. 2 counts, larceny after breaking and entering, Felon Class H. And habitual breaking and entering, Felon Class E.
Well, he certainly wasn't a Class E felon, now was he? Ba-dum-dum-tsh.
No, the joke is, well, his buddy certainly took an e-ticket ride. Baron is on assignment and will return soon.
You're going to hear us talk about this in the show for the next couple months. We're taking a survey of our listeners, and we'd like you to participate. It will help us learn more about you, no matter how long you've been a listener or how frequently you listen to this show. So please take a few minutes and visit our website at gunblogvarietycast.com. You'll find the listener survey link at the top of the right sidebar. It's also in the show notes right at the top, and you can complete the survey anonymously. Thanks.
With hurricanes, and according to my dad, really big bugs, why would anyone live in Florida? Miguel explains.
Hello, heathens, and welcome again to the Mental Flea Market. Why would anyone live in Florida where there are hurricanes? Why not just live somewhere else that storms do not exist? Erin Palette dropped these two questions on me. Apparently, she has been asked by her readers and decided to go straight to the jackass mouth. Me. Let's start with the why. Why did I move to Miami in the first place? Believe it or not, it was prepping. When I decided to leave Venezuela, Hugo Chavez was not yet the president or even an official candidate, but I could read the writing on the wall. The missus and I made the decision to leave and figure out that sooner or later I would have to bring my parents to the U.S. My wife and I feel more comfortable in Tennessee, but my parents did not speak English, and the volunteer state would be keen to drop a New Yorker into the Amazonian jungle and hope he gets used to it. Miami was the logical choice because it's cultural diversity and, at the same time, cultural affinity. Spanish spoken, similar foods, nationalities we were used to know. Venezuela used to be a great hub for refugees escaping from South American countries under dictatorships. So the cultural shock would have been minimum. That, unfortunately, left us too soon, but I did manage to finally convince Mom to leave Venezuela and come live with us. But Miami! All those hurricanes, oh my god, death! I know, people, you know, pipe it down. It's not that awful, let me explain. Hurricanes are polite. Why do I say that? Because in true Southern fashion, hurricanes give you plenty of warning that they're fixing to screw you up. That means you get to prepare and get your together before impact. Do you get that with an earthquake? Nope. Floods? No. Tornadoes? Nope, nope. Maybe massive wildfires can give you some warning, but if the wind changes, you're screwed. Or not. Oh, before I forget it. With the exception of a massive wildfire, I have been through all that crap. Earthquakes? Yes. Pass. It's freaky to see concrete slabs move like yellow and buildings collapsing. Floods? I almost lost my life in one when I was a toddler. I still remember the waters rushing inside the house. That was no f***ing fun. Tornadoes? Do you know how freaky it is for somebody who just moved from the tropics to see the sky turn purple all of a sudden, temperature drop 30 degrees, and hail start peppering your head? Not fun again. Seriously, I almost left the tracks of my tidy whities on that one. So, you give me a choice of natural disasters, I pick hurricanes every single time. Hurricanes seem to come in cycles of 10 years or so. Prior to last year, the last hurricane to hit was Wilma in 2005. Can you say you had a disaster-free decade in your area? It is going to be very rare, right? I have basically spent close to half my life living here in Miami, only worrying about the air conditioning and not dying in the summer. Now, South Florida has learned a lot after Hurricane Andrew. The building codes have been reinforced and improved. We have a great canal system to keep the water from flooding too much or for too long. A fitting area, which is highest natural peak, is only 6 feet tall. The dumb victims that you will see in the news are idiots who refuse to take minimal precautions. There's always some of those. Newly moved carpetbaggers from New York, New Jersey area. Okay, I'm kidding. Some. And the professional victims that think government is supposed to either switch off the hurricane or give them shelter, a new car, and a pony because they demand it. I separate those from the true victims, like those with old houses grandfathered from before the codes, or houses that got damaged because a nearby tree or debris impacted on them. It will happen. Many new people that, you know, move into the area realize it's about to get heavy when they hear the mayor or the governor say to them, "Be advised, you will be on your own anywhere from 3 days to 2 weeks, depending on the damage. Do not expect us to come rescue you, especially when the hurricane is still blowing." It is a moment of epiphany for a lot of them, and panic ensues, which can be fun to us all hurricane hands. Nothing says newbie like buying 40 packs of hot dogs that will not survive without refrigeration. After the hurricane passes, the government is not going to do squat till they figure out what happened, who's the hardest hit, and who requires immediate attention. It is called triage. And you better face that dancing song early and learn to love it. South Floridians know that if we lose power, unless we live next door to a hospital, we ain't getting power back for a while. Same goes for locations with above ground wiring, since it's subject to the impact of pieces of the abundant greenery we are so fond of down here. It's gonna take forever to get them fixed. I live about a mile from an electrical substation, and our area has all underground wiring, and still we got our power back 36 hours after we lost it. In the meantime, we check our neighbors to make sure that they were fine. We clean up debris, open the road so traffic could flow, and just general cleanup. From past experiences, some grocery store chains and gas stations were running on a limited basis via portable or fixed generators. Those of us with our own generators managed to keep the fridges and the freezers cold and did a lot of grilling. Oh yeah, that's good. What I'm trying to say in a long-winded manner is that both government and citizens have a basic understanding of how to prepare for the suckers that are gonna hit us. It will not help everybody, but the number of victims needing help will be greatly reduced. Preparation means less calls to 911 because there are no collapsed homes with people inside or trapped in an attic because of floodwaters. Preparation means not need to wait for the county crews to come chop down trees falling across the road, because very likely at least three neighbors will have chainsaws, many will have axes, and everybody has machetes for the smaller stuff. Hey, this is Miami after all. Caribbeans and their machetes. Preparation means no people starving to death after the second day because Moss bought at least some tuna and crackers to last a week. Preparation means people getting hydrated because they follow the simple rule of having 1 gallon a day per person for at least a week. Preparation means power companies with local and out-of-state linemen on staging areas ready to rebuild the grid. Preparation means every medical personnel ready to take on the injury even when it means to be away from their loved ones. Same for law enforcement and firemen. Preparation means to carefully drive out after the storm and check out what is open and working so your neighbors do not have to run around. We all save gas that way. Check out what pharmacies are open, where are the ice bags being passed around, or even babysit the kids while parents take a well-deserved nap. Preparation means this and much more, and we have done it in the past and we'll do it again in the future, you know, with improvements. And I cannot end this without mentioning guns. Other than some idiots targeting shoe stores, Miami-Dade County was almost looter-free. There might have been a couple of minor things stolen from civilians, but total collapse like you saw during Katrina? Not happening here. The bad guys realized long ago that neighborhoods become armed encampments and they do not take kindly to strangers or to looters. Again, less load on county and state services that can be properly routed to those in need. How effective has all the prep been? The number of deaths in Florida because of hurricanes is small. It's minuscule. You get more people dead by gunshots in an average week in Chicago. The victim tends to be people that made a wrong turn and ended up drowning on a canal or step on an electrified cable or puddle. I think there was one man who died when he was trying to move his car a day after the hurricane. I think it was Wilma. And a branch of a tree broke and hit him in the head. One last thing. Turn off the weather channel and the news on TV. They are in the business to sell commercial time, and they don't get to raise rates by being moderate in their presentations. In conclusion, while hurricanes are amazingly powerful and Irma scared the bejesus out of me, I have a better chance to survive them down here, where it's a culture and an infrastructure prepared for it. Bad news, the wife wants to move to Tennessee and live near the kin, near her folks. Do you know how annoying it is to prep for a whole new set of crap from nature? Okay, guys, that's it. I'll talk to you next week. Thank you for listening.
Get more Miguel daily at gunfreezone.net.
This is Rob Morse of the Self-Defense Gun Stories Podcast. I'm reminding you that this podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self-Defense Radio Network. Check out the other podcasts at selfdefenseradio.net.
The main topic, GRPC. You went to the Gun Rights Policy Conference this weekend. How was that, Aaron?
It was great. I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot of things. Actually, I want to start before that. I want to start briefly with AMCON, which I mentioned last week. And that was the alternate mass media conference put out by Paul Lathrop and Gail Pepin. That was pretty much a day-long masterclass on how best to use your blog, your podcast, your vlog, whatever, how to use it to get more listeners, how to interview better, how to avoid getting caught in interview traps if you're ever a guest in someone else's radio show. Just a lot of great stuff. A lot of great guests there learned a lot. Just when that was finished, there was about a 30-minute break. Then I had to get ready for the Friday Night Mixer of GRPC. That was the fashion show put on by Amanda Suffacool, and I was chosen to model a concealed carry purse. Everyone was very gracious and said I did a good job. I thought I was horrible and incredibly self-conscious.
So you didn't take my advice and watch every episode of Project Runway before you went down there?
I did not. I just channeled my inner diva and walked into the place just feeling fabulous. Really, most of the people at the mixer really didn't care. They were too busy eating and talking to people, and so there was just this annoying fashion show going on at the same time. You know, we all started at the front of the room. We made our way around one of the sides, and the idea was to come out through one door, come in through the center, make our grand entrance, demonstrate how we would draw from concealment because we had blue guns in all of the holsters, and then go back around the other side. Amanda introduced us, we walked around the room, people took some photographs, and the moment we went out the door, people stopped caring. You know, I made my grand entrance, I dramatically threw the doors open, and no one cared. You know, at least no one was pointing and laughing, so there was that. The rest of the evening was just fine, met a lot of really great people. Okay, so funny story here. If anyone knows the Gottliebs, you know that they have a little white dog with them pretty much everywhere they go. Their dog is named Winston, and Winston is a very nice dog, very well behaved. He just has a tendency to try and run off and find some food scraps. While I was milling around on Friday, Winston got away from whoever it was that was looking after him, and he was just wandering the floor. Well, actually, he had his leash on him. There's just no one attached to his leash. And I go, okay, this is a bad thing, but I got food in one hand and drink in the other. So I did the only thing I could think of, and I stepped on his leash.
Yeah?
Yeah, and so he was like, oh, hello.
I must belong to you now.
Hey, a very good dog, well-behaved, didn't fight. It was just, okay, you've got my leash. So then I'm trying to shuffle things around and set this down and pull out my phone because I'm trying to call. This is going to sound so terrible, but I'm a Facebook friend with Andrew Gottlieb. So I was trying to IM him and say, hey, man, your dog's loose. And I'm trying to shuffle all these things. And fortunately, somebody from staff saw what was going on, came and got Winston. All was well. It actually turned out that later that weekend, I believe the next night, I actually had a good conversation with Julianne Vernell, Alan Gottlieb's wife, Andrew Gottlieb's mother. And she said, oh, I understand you're the person who saved Winston. And so we had this great 15-20 minute conversation about our dogs. And I pulled out my smartphone and I showed her pictures of my dogs. And we just had dog stories. It was a great bonding experience because we talked about our fur babies. It was fun.
So, Aaron, I am pretty sure that GRPC is not about hanging out with Andrew's mom and talking about dogs. Tell me some more about what really goes on at these places. What is GRPC? I mean, I know I've been there, but some of our listeners may not have been around when we went last year. So explain some of the things that GRPC is really about.
All right. Well, GRPC is about the luminaries of the gun rights field talking about their areas of expertise or what has happened. For example, Eric Freddy, who is the lead counsel for Florida Carry, talks about what's going on with his case of Norman versus Florida. And Norman is a black gentleman who had just received his carry permit. And as he was walking around, his pistol became visible. And he was not just approached by the police, but proned out on the ground and was arrested. This has turned into a major case that's about to appear before the Supreme Court. So he was telling us about what's going on with that. Another favorite of mine, Paloma Capana, who I hope we can get on the podcast as a guest, gave just a compelling testimony about what's going on in New York and how the government there is just completely abusing or neglecting, or in some cases both, the rights of gun owners.
Interestingly enough, friend of the show Sarah said, hey, you need to interview Paloma Capana. And I had mistaken Paloma for somebody else. Eventually, I remembered who she was from the year before, and I went, oh yeah, we definitely should interview her. So hopefully you can put us in touch. I think you've been trying to contact her so that we can interview her. I think she'd be a really interesting interview, really interesting person.
It was just a lot of good info dumps, not just by lawyers, but by people who are working in the field of gun rights. There were doctors talking about what's going on with, you know, doctors for responsible gun ownership. There was someone from Defense Distributed who was talking about how the knowledge of 3D printing guns, how that was a First Amendment problem, and how they're trying to get this information out there and into the Library of Congress. People were talking about silencers. People were talking about just all sorts of stuff. Pretty much, if it was related to the Second Amendment, it was there. And then, of course, one of the last speakers of Saturday was Dr. John Lott with his intense presentation involving all the numbers you could ever want to refute an anti-gunner's claims.
I understand that on Saturday, they had a bunch of like gay people and transgender people talking about guns too.
Actually, no, that wasn't Saturday. That was
Sunday.
Yes.
On the Lord's Day.
Yes. Okay. So this is actually a little bit funny. So let me backtrack to Saturday, because one of the other panels was, I don't remember the actual term for it. It was something vaguely inoffensive. I think it was like urban outreach or whatever. But as Maj Touré put it, because he was one of the speakers, he says, this is the black panel. and there was a marvelous thing where he just went up there and he said, essentially, I mean, these were not his words, but the sentiment was, so I'm looking out and I see a whole bunch of white people. And part of the problem is white people don't know how to talk to black people. So I am very open. So how about some of you white people come up and ask this black person how to talk to black people? The first guy came up was just so very nervous. He was stuttering all over the place. He was trying so hard not to offend. And Maj said, now see, this is exactly what I'm talking about. You are so upset. You are obsessing about not offending that you're not communicating. Just spit it out. So one of the people later on said, well, what can we do to help reach out to the black people? Maj said, now this is the part where I piss away some of the goodwill I have. Now, look around. Why are all the black people on one panel? And there was just this awkward, uncomfortable silence where people go, oh, yeah, that happened, didn't it? And I'm sitting there in the room, and on the one hand, I'm laughing because it's true. And on the other hand, I'm thinking, oh, you just wait, because Sunday we're going to have the gay panel.
And see, I don't understand why I don't get the credit, because last year at GRPC, I asked the very question. I'm like, I went straight to the source. I went right to Tiffany and I said, Tiffany, explain black people to me. And I thought you were going to swallow your whole fist because, like, your hand went to your mouth, but you clenched it into a fist and then you jammed it into your mouth completely. Your eyes were as big as dinner plates. You were horrified. And Tiffany, it was like a little beat. And then Tiffany started laughing. And then I started laughing. And then you're staring at the two of us like, what just happened? It was freaking hilarious.
Yeah, okay. The reason for my reaction was, number one, it just came out of the blue. Number two, it was so incredibly blunt, and there was that whole undertone of, Tiffany, black people are inexplicable to me. Make sense of it. And I was just, oh, God, there's no way this can... Wait, this is ending well? Wow.
And see, that was how I knew that I was going to always love Tiffany, because she took that and laughed at it and just rolled with it, and she and I can pretty much say anything to each other. And when she talks, I'm going to listen, because she's not just going to get offended at random stupid things. If Tiffany's upset about something, there's probably some substance behind it. So, yeah, that was kind of a little test and kind of a little, this is who I am, let's see if we can get along. And holy crap, she's awesome. Maj would have known better than to ask me to come up there. Because I'd have said, Maj, explain black people to me. And Tiffany would have rolled out of her chair.
Oh, I wish that had happened. That would have been funny. Would have cut the tension.
No, he really, that sounds like he was exactly where he needed to be. He needed to make his point. I would have felt bad if I would have gone and messed up the point that he was trying to make.
Yeah.
Because he's right. Where are all the black people? Why are they only on the one panel?
Mm-hmm. And so Sunday, yes, the Lord's Day, we actually continued that trend, because first there was the gay panel or the queer panel, and then it was followed by the woman's panel, where it was, I think they actually called the panel the better half. And it was all women talking about outreach to women. And so I think next year we're going to get those things shaken up a little bit. So my panel, there were originally going to be three of us. Nikki Stallard, a gentleman called Chad from Pink Pistols in South Florida, and of course myself. And as a result of Hurricane Irma, Chad wasn't able to make it. Now, he's fine. And to the best of my knowledge, his house is fine. It's just a combination of cleanup and maybe some work. He couldn't make it. So we had a 30-minute panel, and it had gone from 10 minutes per person to now 15 minutes per person. And Nikki had this marvelous idea. She says, we need to come in early, because so many people on GRPC run late, as you know. And they will love us forever if we manage to come in early. So her plan was, she stood up for about 5 minutes. She was essentially my hype woman. It wasn't talking just about me, but she warmed the crowd up. She's very outgoing and enthusiastic. Someone described her as being excessively extroverted. And so she warms the crowd up. She speaks for only about 5 minutes, and then she tosses over to me. I give my speech, and I start off with a joke, which I probably shouldn't even reference on this podcast. Pretty soon, I get the audience laughing. And I deliberately started out with a silly joke, because it is so very easy to turn serious discussions about gender and sexuality into scolding. And the last thing I wanted was for the audience to make it seem like I was lecturing them. So I get up there, I make a joke at my own expense, we all laugh, they realize, okay, I'm not uptight, we're all here to have a good time, we're all on the same side. For 10 minutes, I give a very precise info dump. I introduce myself, I do a little bit about Operation Blazing Sword, and then because since I don't know when I'm going to get the chance to talk to a group of people like this again, I give them pointers, essentially, taking from Maj's plan, although I didn't know he was going to do that when I was writing my speech. It was one of these, well, here's how you talk to queer people. Because you see, the panel was growing gun rights in the LGBTQ community. And there were two ways we could have taken that. We could have talked about how gun rights are growing, but I chose to address it as a verb, as in, how do we grow gun rights in the queer community? I figured, all right, here are the three things you need to know if you are a straight person and you're trying to talk to a queer person about guns. I dumped a lot of information on them, and I actually managed to do that in about 10 minutes. So we are done. A full 15 minutes before we're supposed to be done. And on the one hand, the moderator loves us. On the other hand, the next panel isn't ready. So while they scramble to get the next panel ready, the moderator says, well, we've got some time. How about we do a Q&A? So we have this impromptu Q&A come up. A couple of people ask some good questions. And friend of the show, Andrew Branca, specifically asked, I don't know if he asked or if he said it, but he said something like, now, Aaron, if people want to know more about you, where should they go to listen to you? I don't remember exactly. He is basically an opportunity to talk about the podcast.
Yeah.
Mr. Branca.
Is it true that people can hear more about what you're up to on the Gunblog Variety Cast?
I'm going to love you for that. For those who don't know, I am co-hostess of a gun-based podcast, the Gunblog Variety Cast, where I do occasionally, although not all the time, talk about what's going on with Operation Blazing Sword. So thank you, Andrew, you checked the mail.
And so I thanked him for that, and I did indeed plug our podcast, and I thanked him, and I told him that the check was in the mail.
What was really funny about that is I got a Facebook message. Actually, no, I was tagged in a post on Facebook that was, Sean, you were totally missing the best panel in all of GRPC. Erin Paulette is up, and she's rocking it. You should totally be here, and you're missing out. And I'm like, great. And as a kind of a joke, I'm like, well, as long as she plugs the podcast, I'm cool with it. He comes back later. Well, there was a Q&A afterwards, so I asked her about the podcast. I'm like, well, thank you. Well, yeah, in fact, he's like, you could text Aaron and tell her. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's going to go over well. Like, no, I jog her elbow enough just on the podcast. I'm not going to do it while she's speaking to a live audience. That's why he asked. He was actually talking to me at the time.
Oh, that explains it. You texting me wouldn't have done any good anyway. I mean, my phone was off. It was not near me, so it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah. He's all like, you could text her and ask her to talk about the podcast. Like, no, I am not going to do this. Funny though that is, no. So yeah, he actually asked that because he was telling me about your awesome panel at the time.
Yeah, people were extraordinarily kind to me. They were saying that it was the best panel of the convention. And I honestly don't know that that's true because I heard some really amazing speakers. But I am really honored to have been just put in that same category. Just to wrap up here, you would think, at least the media would have you believe, that a queer person going up in front of a bunch of straight gun owners would receive just a lot of hate, right?
Mm-hmm. Obviously. We know, we gun owners, we totally hate the gay.
Yeah.
And black people too, but mostly gay people. If we find some gay black people, let me tell you.
The proper term, Sean, is queer people of color.
Yeah, whatever.
All right. So, yeah, you would expect that, right? Well, the only thing that I know of, and this is only because someone told me, because I didn't see it. Apparently, one person out of that entire room said something like, ugh, the gay panel, got up and left. And when he came back, the person sitting next to him, who was the person who told me this story, told him, man, you missed the best panel of the convention. And this was a gentleman I had never seen before. It was just incredibly humbling to have, humbling and ego-boosting at exactly the same time, which is a really weird feeling, but I don't know how else to describe it. Just to have total strangers come up and say, wow, best panel of the convention. And I'm going, really? Were you not here for some of the other amazing presentations on Saturday? But I had a good time. My strategy of front-loading all my stress at the beginning worked well, because when I got up on stage, I figured the only way this can go worse is if I catch on fire, and I didn't catch on fire. So everything else was just downhill. Apparently, I did a good enough job that I was asked to come back next year. And who knows, maybe next year I'll speak on Saturday.
Well, I'll do my best to actually make it to next year's, and hopefully we'll have national concealed carry reciprocity by then so that I can carry in Chicago and put a thumb in the eye of all the anti-gunners that live there.
That would be nice, yeah. Tiffany is on assignment and will return soon.
Cerakote is a polymer ceramic composite coating that can be applied to metals, plastics, polymers, and wood. It's also what will take your plain Jane firearm from basic to full custom.
Whether you want a handgun coated in just a single color, your hunting rifle camouflaged for your specific environment, or your competition pistol sprayed in purple, white, and black Carolina Cryptic, you want Carolina Ceramic Coating to do the job. Bud and his team of skilled technicians will carefully disassemble and clean your firearm, professionally apply the Cerakote in your choice of colors and patterns, and return your firearm to you in perfect working order. And they also do auto engine parts. When I wanted my competition handgun Cerakoted, I trusted Carolina Ceramic Coating, and you should too. Check out their work on Instagram. Search at CerakoteNC, that's at CERAKOTENC, or go to CarolinaCeramicCoating.com. And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Erin Paulette.
Come on, every pony! It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Erin Paulette!
By now, everyone knows about the mass murder in Las Vegas, and you're probably expecting me to do a segment on it. Sean asked me to do a segment called Carry Medical Gear, but the truth of the matter is that this subject has already been covered quite expertly. In episode 160, Sean talked to paramedic Kelly Grayson on what first aid gear we preppers and gun owners should carry on a regular basis. Tourniquet, hemostatic dressing, chest seal, wound care supplies like gauze, gloves, and a CPR pocket mask. If you carry an SFD responder around your ankle like Sean does, you're all set. Or you can carry these in a purse, backpack, or cargo pocket. There, that's your everyday carry medical gear. Boom, done, end of segment. Except that there's something which has been bothering me about Vegas. The hard numbers haven't yet crystallized, but here's what I've seen. 59 dead, one of which may have been the shooter. I personally never count the perpetrators in the death count of any murder because, well, fuck those only innocent victims count. 527 injured. This number keeps fluctuating. I've seen it as low as 515 and as high as 528, but 527 seems to pop up the most. What we don't know, what we may never know, is how many people died as a result of the stampede to escape the gunshots versus those who were actually shot. This is of interest to me because there were 22,000 people at the Route 91 Harvest Festival. Past a certain density, crowds stop behaving like groups of people and begin acting like fluids. When this happens, all sorts of tragedies occur because the mass and motion of the people at the back of the crowd can literally pick up people at the front of the crowd and move them against their will, or worse, crush them against an obstacle. Just 6 or 7 adult humans pushing in the same direction can generate up to 1,000 pounds of force, enough to break down gates and bend steel guardrails. If that force can bend metal, imagine what it can do to a human body. Actually, there's no need to imagine. It's been documented. The proper name for this is crowd crush, and it kills hundreds of people a year. This is most common during the Muslim pilgrimage known as the Hajj, where large numbers of people are forced through a small area on a tight schedule. Hundreds of people die on a regular basis during the Hajj, the worst of which was the 2015 MENA stampede, which killed over 2,000 people. The critical number for a crowd crush scenario is 5 people per square yard. At 4 people per square yard, you are being touched on all 4 sides, but you still have the ability to turn around through a full 360 degrees. At this point, you still have room to make decisions and you move as an individual. At 5 people per square foot, you are unable to turn around. This is the point where the crowd begins to act like a fluid, with shock waves that ripple through it as a result of the people pushing and being pushed. You are no longer part of the crowd, you are the crowd, and you go where it goes. At 6 or more people per square foot, your life is in danger from 2 equally horrible fates, crowd collapse and crowd crush. Crowd collapse is when someone in a crowd falls, and the mass and motion of the crowd forces the people behind that person forward. They trip over the fallen person and fall down themselves, usually atop the first person. This continues as more people from the back are forced forward into a fatal dogpile. This results in broken bones and even death. Crowd crush is what happens when you are packed together so tightly that the weight of the person behind you crushes you against the object or person in front of you with such force that you are unable to inhale. This is called compressive asphyxia. In effect, the crowd acts like a gigantic constrictor snake, waiting for you to exhale and then pinning your chest so you cannot breathe in and you suffocate while standing up. So,
How do you avoid dying from crowd crush or crowd collapse? Follow these simple rules. If you find yourself packed so tightly that you cannot turn around, get out of the crowd. You should already know where the emergency exits are, so start moving in that direction. I shall reiterate for clarity. Head for the nearest emergency exit, not the main exit. Keep your arms in front of your chest in a classic boxer stance. This will protect your chest so that you have room to breathe. Lift your feet high in the air, at least 6 inches. This will allow you to step over most obstacles that could trip you and cause a crowd collapse. Do not push against the crowd. Instead, move in a lateral direction, to the side or at a diagonal, to get to the edges. Not only will this get you to the exits and safety, but pressure will be lighter the further out you go. Do this by waiting for a lull in the pushing of the crowd and move quickly in the space that appears. Again, for clarity, you are moving laterally or diagonally in relation to the crowd. Your body should be moving forward whenever possible, not sidestepping. However, be aware of where you're going. You don't want to be at the edge of the crowd and trapped between it and a wall, because if the crowd is panicked, such as from gunshots on the other side, the crowd could decide that where you are is now where it wants to go and crush you against that wall. Make sure you're headed for an exit. If necessary, make one. I recall that one of the concert goers at Route 51 kicked down a segment of fence to escape. If you can't escape, try to find a large immovable object, like a car or a pillar, behind which you can hide. Remember, the crowd is a fluid, and when fluids flow around objects, there's space on the side opposite the flow that the fluid avoids. Take shelter there. If you do fall, get up quickly. If you can't, curl onto your side in the fetal position, with your arms protecting your face and your knees to your elbows in order to protect your chest. Your only priority at this point is to keep breathing. I'm not going to lie, you're going to take a beating, but broken bones heal. Death, on the other hand, is forever. Essentially, surviving crowd crush is all about situational awareness. Know where the exits are, look for the warning signs, stay near the edges, and get out before trouble finds you.
After the mass murder in Las Vegas, Jimmy Kimmel leaped onto the stage to give an anti-gun monologue. Weird takes it apart
in This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery.
So late night host Jimmy Kimmel grew up in Las Vegas, so he devoted his monologue for October 2nd to the recent massacre. As a comedian, I love Jimmy Kimmel. I was a huge fan of The Man Show. I don't watch TV, so I haven't seen much of him since, but it seems politically we don't have a lot to agree on.
Here we are again in the aftermath of another terrible, inexplicable, shocking, and painful tragedy, this time in Las Vegas, which happens to be my hometown and Cleto's hometown, Cleto Sr.'s hometown.
This is about the only statement he makes in this monologue that I can agree with.
Because there weren't any of the usual signs, I've been reading comments from people say this is terrible, but there's nothing we can do about it. But I disagree with that intensely, because of course there's something we can do about it. There are a lot of things we can do about it.
There's still a lot unknown, but we know for sure that the shooter had a clean background and had acquired his guns legally. What would Jimmy Kimmel propose that might have stopped this?
Because when someone with a beard attacks us, we tap phones, we invoke travel bans, we build walls, we take every possible precaution to make sure it doesn't happen again. But when an American buys a gun and kills other Americans, then there's nothing we can do about that.
Of course, he's not talking about yours truly and my beard, nor is he talking about that flock of bearded jerks that took over the wildlife refuge in Oregon. Instead, he's talking about Islamic terrorists, which is a crime problem we have been just as successful at curtailing as mass shootings. Yeah, we tap phones, and we have travel bans, we have secret lists, we have border security, and none of that has done much for the terrorists who have attacked us. So even if Kimmel was proposing similar interventions, I suspect they would have a similar success rate.
Second Amendment, I guess. Our forefathers wanted us to have AK-47s, is the argument, I assume.
Not exactly, but the Brown Best Musket was the greatest infantry arm at the time of the ratification of the Bill of Rights. There were also existing large-capacity, rapid-fire weapons like the Puckle Gun and the Girondoni Air Rifle. Further, at the time of the Bill of Rights, privateering was a very lucrative career path, and private citizens owned fully outfitted warships. The Founding Fathers felt no need to mention any of this minutiae when penning the Second Amendment. Not only do I think the Founders wouldn't be bothered by the AR-15s and semi-auto AKs being in private hands, they would likely see M16s and M4s as the equivalent of the Brown Bess, and warships and attack aircraft are similar to the privateers of the time.
Orlando, Newtown, Aurora, San Bernardino, every one of these shootings, the murderer used automatic or semi-automatic rifles, which are not weapons you use for self-defense. They're weapons designed to kill large numbers of people in the shortest possible amount of time.
Now here's a bait and switch. Yes, the shooters use semi-auto rifles in those crimes, but there have been zero crimes in recent years using full-auto guns. Putting that in is intentionally misleading. Many people thought the federal assault weapons ban affected the legality of full-auto firearms. That was a huge advantage for the anti-gunners, and I think they want it back. Also, not used for self-defense? Tell that to all the people who have defended their lives with modern rifles. If they were just tools for mass murder, why do we give them to police?
A reporter had 10 of them in his room, apparently legally. At least some of them were there legally. Why is that allowed?
Well, if you can own one gun, you can own 1,000. I mean, you only have two hands. Why is it allowed? It wasn't. The hotel has a policy against weapons on the premises. The shooter cared as much about that as he did about the laws against murder.
I don't know why our so-called leaders continue to allow this to happen. Or maybe a better question, why do we continue to let them to allow it to happen?
Okay, that's over the damn line. Fuck you, Kimmel. Allow this to happen? Like there is anybody who's okay with what happened here. How dare you imply any of us are complicit with this act of utter evil?
The bills will be written, they'll be watered down, they'll fail, the NRA will smother it all with money, and over time we'll get distracted, we'll move on to the next thing.
The NRA's money will have nothing to do with the failures of the anti-gun side. If policy could be bought, Michael Bloomberg would have done it by now. No, these bills fail because they're the same tired and failed agenda points. Just now, they're attempting to use the nation's mourning to springboard what wouldn't get a second glance on a normal day.
The Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, the Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, a number of other lawmakers who won't do anything about this because the NRA has their balls in a money clip, also sent their thoughts and their prayers today.
More wishful thinking. I wish the NRA had a steel grasp on these spineless weenies. As far as I'm concerned, the only thing the establishment politicians want is the status quo. We haven't enacted any major gun changes after the most pro-gun political victory of our lifetime. Nor did the other side get anything done with anti-gun Obama and his supermajority legislature.
And last night, the White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said this is not the time, or actually it was today, this morning, she said it was not the time for political debate. And I don't know, we have 59 innocent people dead. It wasn't their time either. So I think now is the time for political debate.
At the time of his speaking, most of them weren't even buried yet. And many were and still are fighting for their lives. The police are still working around the clock to uncover evidence to why this was done and how it was done. We have more questions than answers, so proposing solutions at this point is foolish and stupid. But that's just what the anti-gun playbook calls for. They tell supporters to charge in with their agenda before the facts are known and lead with emotion rather than logic.
Maybe I'm nuts, but I would like to think we can put politics aside and agree that no American citizen needs an M16. Or 10 of them.
See? Did the shooter have an M16? No, he didn't. But Kimmel is talking about M16s. Why? Because he isn't putting politics aside. He's leading with his politics and using the blood of these people to push a foolhardy agenda. Next, Kimmel takes a swipe at Trump.
You know, in February, he also signed a bill that made it easier for people with severe mental illness to buy guns legally.
No, he didn't. Donald Trump reversed an executive order done by Barack Obama that declared Social Security recipients who had a designated payee to handle their finances as mentally ill for their background. Nothing you just said was true.
It's so crazy. Right now, there are loopholes in the law that let people avoid background checks if they buy a gun privately from another party, if they buy a gun online or at a gun show.
It's not a loophole. The law allows people to privately sell their property. At gun shows and online, we're almost always talking about transactions with a dealer and require a background check. Private citizens cannot conduct background checks. There was a law that would allow citizens access to the NICS in such a way that the data couldn't be used either as a tax or as a registry. And the anti-gun nuts who are calling for universal background checks now had it killed in committee. I wonder why that was.
90% of Democrats, I'm not talking about politicians here, I'm talking about people, and 77% of Republicans support background checks at gun shows.
At gun shows? I don't even know what he's citing, but if you've been listening to this segment long enough, you know whatever it is, it's untrue.
89% of Republicans and Democrats are in favor of restricting gun ownership for the mentally ill. But not this gang. They voted against both of those things.
Everybody is in favor of keeping guns out of the hands of the dangerously mentally ill. It's the anti-gun nuts that like to play fast and loose with the definition of mentally ill, because their end goal is to ban guns by any means necessary. The people who President Obama declared mentally ill weren't, and President Trump simply undid a bad and unjust executive order.
You know, in June of last year, the NRA fought to make sure people on the no-fly list can buy guns.
Because you know who isn't on the no-fly list? Terrorists. As far as I know, there isn't anybody on that damn list who is any more danger than any other person on the damn planet. Not only should the people on that list not be restricted in buying guns, they shouldn't be restricted in any way. This list should be gone, and shame on anybody who supports it.
What I'm talking about tonight isn't about gun control. It's about common sense.
You've been doing nothing but lying and misleading this entire monologue, including this statement. You're discussing the Las Vegas massacre, but now you're talking about background checks and the terror watch list. Does this have anything to do with the shooting? It doesn't. But like I said, anti-gun nuts like to bring up their agenda after a tragedy in hopes that our judgment will be clouded by grief. There is nothing common sense about that. Then he talks about some major casino fires that he remembers from his youth.
They changed the laws. They made major changes to the fire safety codes, and it hasn't happened again. Why would we approach this differently? It's a public safety issue.
Why indeed? Fire codes identify specific dangers and address them. You're talking about background checks, terror watch lists, and declaring random people mentally ill. This is the equivalent of enacting a law that requires all hotels being painted in blue and green because cool colors prevent fires.
We have a major problem with gun violence in this country, and I guess they don't care. And if I'm wrong on that, fine, do something about it because I'm sick of it.
You are wrong. Completely wrong. We have been doing things about it. Gun ownership is up nationally, concealed carry is easier, and violent crime is down.
I want this to be a comedy show. I hate talking about stuff like this.
No, no you don't. I don't blame you for using your soapbox to talk about this issue, and I have compassion for your emotions. But you aren't speaking for common sense, and you aren't giving comfort to the victims. You are only making bad faith arguments.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's W-E-E-R-D world.com.
Plug of the week, the Trunk Crate Pro Collapsible Trunk Organizer. So Aaron, you're always telling people they need to carry stuff in their car for things if they happen, they need them. And I've seen your car. It kind of looks like you've piled a whole bunch of stuff in the trunk, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, that's true.
Well, it turns out that having stuff in your trunk, junk, in fact, in your trunk, when it moves around and just scatters all over the place, it's just annoying to me. So a long time ago, I raided the attic and I took one of my wife's plastic wash tub things, you know, the holiday bins.
Mm-hmm.
And I stole one of those from the wife and I put all of my work stuff and some water and some food and a change of clothes and a med kit, my hard hat from work. I stuffed it in this plastic box and then I put it in the trunk. And then every time I went around a corner, it slid to the other side of the trunk and fell over. But it was better than just leaving it all laying about in the trunk and then having to clear it out of the trunk whenever I had to do something. I went to Philadelphia. One of the other people that worked for the company, he opens up his trunk as, you know, he's driving me from place to place. He opens up his trunk and I go to throw my new laptop in the back and, you know, some stuff that I had with me. And I look and he's got this bag in there. And I'm like, ooh, that looks pretty cool. What is it? He opens it up and he's like, it's got his hard hat. It's got his chain, you know, like some coveralls. It's got a few odds and ends. I'm like, that's not bad. Where do you get that? He says, check out on Amazon, look for this thing. And I started searching, and what I decided to buy was this Trunk Crate Pro collapsible trunk organizer. Cost me just short of $40. And it's this, it collapses, which I'm not sure how that's valuable to me because I'm going to leave it full of stuff. But it's this little, kind of like a open top duffel bag that is pretty rigid for, you know, it's made out of fabric. I can stuff all of my things in it, and really neat, it's got Velcro on the bottom that sticks to the carpet in your trunk. You can see the picture that I put in the show notes. It's been sitting in my trunk right there for the last week, and it hasn't moved, right? It doesn't slide from place to place. It doesn't flip over. It doesn't dump all of my stuff everywhere. It keeps it neat. It keeps it organized. I'm actually thinking about buying another one so that I can have one for the stuff that stays in the trunk all the time and the work stuff. Right? There's work stuff. I don't need to take it with me if I'm going to my folks' house, but I do want to keep my spare food, you know, some water, my first aid kit, all that stuff I want to keep in the trunk. So I might end up getting two, but for right now, it's doing a great job. Just one sitting in the trunk, leaving the rest of my trunk unencumbered by scattered items all over the place. It's pretty cool. So for $40, you can pick them up. They come in red, blue, black, and this kind of weird off green. They call it green, but it's kind of a teal. I don't know. I'm a dude. I don't know what that color is. But it's big enough to hold 8 1-gallon bottles of milk. Has Velcro on the bottom, like I said, doesn't slide around. And I'm seriously thinking about buying another one so that I can have my survival stuff, my get home bag, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And the work stuff, and I can just take it out. I mean, assuming I can rip the Velcro out because it really does stick to that carpet. So I like it a lot. Trunk Crate Pro. There's a link in the show notes. Buy it on Amazon.
I think the next one you get should be blue.
Nah, blue's the wife's color.
But you see,
red and blue make purple. No, blue is the wife's color. I saw that one coming, Aaron. Red's my alternate color. Blue is always the wife's color. So as a quick reminder, join GBVC Radio Group on Facebook. I have no idea when we're going to do our next giveaway, but we'll get some stuff if there's somebody out there who wants to give some stuff away so we can give it away to our GBVC Radio Group people. Hey, hit me up. We'll do a giveaway for you. Well, that's our show for the week. Remember that Gunblog Varietycast Radio is a member of the Self-Defense Radio Network.
Find the show notes at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode 164.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast. Music courtesy of Rob Allen at blog.roballen.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. This podcast is made possible by the Firearms Policy Coalition and by contributions from listeners like you. This is a URS production.